And our guest tonight, Paul Rademacher, he's the executive director of the Monroe Institute. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with Paul. Perhaps you'll share some of your incredible stories of human consciousness. We'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Take us through, if you could, Paul, a course study. Basically, someone comes to the Monroe Institute. What happens?
Well, the first thing is they walk through the door, and then we take them to their room, which is, the room itself is a little different from an ordinary hotel room, because it's got a bed surrounded by four walls with a little cubby that you can crawl through to get in there. Basically, it's a bed in a box, and the opening that you crawl through has a curtain that you pull, and it's a heavy black curtain that allows you to seal out, you know, ambient noise and external lighting so that you can not be so distracted by what's going on in the outside world so that you can begin to focus on the inside world. And you sleep in that bed, but that's also the same bed that you listen to the exercises in as well, because the program is delivered over headphones. And that's where the participants are led through each exercise, both by verbal guidance and also by technology that has been developed by Monroe Products. And that technology is called HemiSync. And basically what that is a series of sounds. For instance, what they will do is they'll put one tone in one ear and another tone that's just a little bit different in the other ear. And if you've ever tuned a guitar or any kind of instrument, when two tones get very close, there's sort of a wavering or a vibrato. And that wavering or vibrato is the basis of our HemiSync technology. The signals are actually much, much more complex than that, because they're a series of signals that are changing over time. But what these signals allow you to do is to begin to move into various states of consciousness that are non-ordinary. So, for instance, we have a series of destination points that we take people to in the first program, which is called our Gateway Program. The first destination point is called Focus 10. And Bob Monroe used numbers because he didn't want to prejudice people by having anything that might lead them into some kind of preconception about what was going to happen. And he thought that numbers were the most neutral thing you could think of. So the numbers, even though they're sequential to some extent, they're not hierarchical. It doesn't mean that one state is any better or more advanced than the other. They're just different. So this first state, which is called Focus 10, is what we call the state of mind awake, body asleep. And as I had said before, you know, when you start to get gradually more relaxed, ordinarily what happens is that you fall asleep. But you're able to maintain consciousness with what we do while your body's still very relaxed. And there's a friend of mine was using the HemiSync tapes. These were tapes back then. Mm-hmm. And he went through the first experience, and he got very upset because he noticed that while he was listening to it, that apparently one of the technician had fallen asleep on the tape because there was snoring. And he couldn't believe that they would send something out like that to the public. And then he realized that the person who was snoring was actually himself. So he was awake while he was listening to his body snoring. So that's kind of the depth that people can begin to get into in this Focus 10. And the Focus 10 was really the basis of the early work, all of the early work that Bob Monroe did. His first books are written from the Focus 10 state entirely, because he didn't even know that there was anything else possible other than that. But over time, they discovered that there's another destination point that we call Focus 12, and that is the state of expanded awareness, awareness beyond the five physical senses, and that can take many, many different forms for people. So on the first day, we would take people to Focus 10. Then the second day of our program, we would take people to Focus 12. The third day of the program, we take people to Focus 15, which is the state beyond time.
And can you see the difference or the change between day one and day three with these people?
In terms of
progression.
People, yes. Now, it doesn't happen for everybody. For instance, what will happen often is that people will gravitate toward one focus level as opposed to the other. Some people can get all of them as we go, and they can tell the differences between them. Some people get a little hung up along the way, but inevitably the magic works regardless of where they are. So Focus 15 then gives you the opportunity to begin to explore with what's the meaning of time, and what does it mean to go backwards and forwards in time? What does it mean to be in a timeless state? And so that's a tremendous area for exploration there. And then the fourth and final destination that we take people to is what we call Focus 21, which is the bridge state between physical reality and non-physical awareness. And so there, for instance, you can encounter people who passed over to the other side and begin to have conversations with them. You can visit many different destinations within Focus 21 as well. So the week progresses in that way, but each day, for instance, we would start off by waking people up, and then breakfast, exercise, and then introducing the first exercise, and then everybody would go back up into their units. We call them check units because that's short for controlled.
And what's for breakfast? I'm curious.
What's for breakfast?
Yeah, I'm curious.
Just normal food. We try to make it as normal as we can. We try to accommodate
everybody. Nothing weird, nothing special. Okay.
No, we try to keep it as mundane as we possibly can.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Right. So we introduce some exercise as a group, and then everybody goes up into their individual units where the beds are. They listen to it, and then we come back down and begin to discuss that as a group. And you're free to discuss if you want to. If you just want to stay quiet, that's fine. But we find that the group energy and the group interactions add a tremendous amount of both insight and energy to the whole experience. And so there's this kind of movement back and forth from the exercise in the units and then coming back as a group. And the group tremendous. Turns out to be a very important aspect of the whole experience because, as we found down through the years, there's actually kind of a field effect that happens when you have a group of people going through exercises like this together.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You know, we have on Fridays, Paul, what we call the prayer session. And it's not channeled at any specific time. It's just that people concentrate on those who write in and need help, whether it's a job or health related. And we've had some incredibly miraculous stories of people later on who say, I had a tumor, I went back after I asked for this prayer, and it's gone. And doctors are bewildered, they're bewildered, but things like that. And again, you know, I qualify for saying we're not taking credit for this. I just find it to be very fascinating.
And I think that we are capable of so much more than we have allowed ourselves to believe. And the examples that you're talking about are examples that we know quite well, too, because we have here something that we call a Dolphin Energy Club, which is something where people can call in with various requests for healing, and then our members of that club will do meditations that will hold that person in their perfect healing presence. And just as you're talking, we have miraculous results from that as well.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your perspective on death and dying, life after death as well. Something that everybody is interested in, maybe not when they're 20, but surely when they become 40, 50, 60, or 70.
Mm-hmm.
What have you changed your perspective on that at all over your years?
Yeah, I really have, because, you know, when I was in the ministry for those 15 years, one of the things is you never really get too far away from death. I mean, you're visiting in the hospital all the time and doing funerals all the time. And one of the things that becomes very apparent pretty quickly is that death is kind of one of those taboo subjects in our culture. You know, people just don't want to talk about it because they're not prepared for it. And because we're so focused on the physical dimension, it's very difficult for many people to imagine what might happen once we let go of the physical body. And so I At first, when I went into the ministry, it was tremendously difficult for me to go into some of those situations, like going into a nursing home and watching the, you know, the devastation of people who are truly suffering, and, you know, being at the bedside of someone who was dying and not really knowing what to say or do, because they don't always teach you those kinds of things in seminary. But over time, you know, I got more and more comfortable with it. And one of the things that I think changed my perspective pretty dramatically was when I read Raymond Moody's book, Life After Life.
Yes.
And he was talking about people who had died, had near-death experiences, and come back and told the story about it. And that was tremendously compelling for me. And it gave me a lot of confidence then when I would go and talk with people and I could speak openly with them. In a lot of ways, it was interesting to watch the families dancing around the subject of death. You know, here's somebody who's dying, right? And it's like the most important thing that's on their agenda. And they really would like to talk about it, but nobody in the family wants to admit that death might be a possibility.
Right around the corner for the guy.
Exactly. Oh, no, you're going to be up and we're going to play golf next Tuesday. No problem. You're going to be fine. But then, you know, when everybody would leave, it was a real privilege to be able to sit with people and to talk about this thing that was really pressing for them and to talk about it openly and with compassion. But I think that, you know, the real change for me happened when I went to the Monroe Institute. My father had died of Alzheimer's disease about 7 years before I went, and I was at his bedside when he died. And as he was sort of losing, you know, phasing in and out of consciousness, at one moment of lucidity, I said to him, "Dad, when you get to the other side, will you come back and tell me what it's all about?"
Yeah.
And he just kind of nodded. And
tried to pull a Houdini on him, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. So then I go up to the Monroe Institute, and I go into this experience, and I'm just sort of moving along, you know, I don't know, am I flying, who, you know, just different from what normally the way we navigate. Now I'm moving along, and all of a sudden I noticed off to my left there is this circle of beings of light. And I thought to myself, "Huh, those are beings of light. You don't see that every day." So I stopped and turned to the left and peered into the circle where they were standing, and there was this guy who was at the bottom of the circle, just kind of laying there. And then all of a sudden I realized it was my father. And this is 7 years after he's died, but he's obviously just come over from dying, and he's now at the bottom of this circle. And instinctively, I pick him up in my arms, and I start telling him that his family's going to come and visit with him and meet him, and that, you know, different things that are going to happen. And I don't even know how I knew this stuff, but it was just very instinctive. After a while, the beings of light came back and took him from me, and they said, "You've done a great job. His family's coming. We can tend to him now." And then the experience was over. Now, I couldn't have made that up if I tried.
No way.
I mean, it was just so compelling to me and so moving. The only way I could respond to it was just a flood of tears, to think that I could be at my father's bedside when he was dying, and then also be welcoming him to the other side was more than I could even begin to take in.
Does that make you understand death a little better or appreciate it?
Yes, I think so, because for me, you know, death is certainly not the end, but death is really in so many ways the beginning of something pretty marvelous. I think we're multidimensional beings right from the start, and even when we're in the physical body, we still have multidimensional capabilities. For me, in that particular case, I was able to move into a different dimension that was beyond the physical. So it isn't as if something is ending. It is something that is just a transition, or maybe an enhancement of awarenesses that we are capable in this lifetime right now. So those experiences have really changed the way I look at death, for sure.
If you had to bet everything you had, not that you're better, would you bet, would you put it all on the line that there's a hereafter?
Oh, yeah.
You would.
Yeah. I, for me, there's just no doubt. And again, it's not something that's a belief for me. It comes out of my own experience. And that's why I feel so confident in it. I've been there.
Yeah. And that changes you forever, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it isn't just me who's been there. You know, we've had, you know, thousands of people who have gone to the other side beyond death, and actually also worked to help escort other people through the death process, very similar to what I did with my father.
You know, that's why, you know, I had Michael Shermer on. Do you know who he is? He is the publisher of the Skeptical magazine, and. Mm-hmm. He, you know, he's a skeptic. I mean, he just doesn't believe. He doesn't believe in God. He doesn't believe in life after death. He believes in what we have here, what you see, evidence. But that's his opinion. I'm not chastising that. But I just don't know how someone can go through life and not believe. Now, Michael told an incredible story that I had never heard before. And I asked him, I said, were you ever a non-believer in all this? And he said, no, there was a time I believed. I believed in God. And one day, a girl I was dating got into a car accident and crippled herself. Her spinal cord was damaged. And I prayed to God that she would be able to move again, that she would not be a paraplegic. And I prayed and I prayed. And here's this innocent girl who never hurt anybody. And he let me down. From that point on, Paul, he became a skeptic. He became a non-believer. I said to him, maybe your belief wasn't as good as you thought it was in the beginning, and this one-time request wasn't granted because you really didn't believe that much in it. So, you know, it was frustrating. I can understand how he feels to feel as if, you know, he's been turned down. I mean, a little baby dies. What do you tell the parents? Why did God do this? I mean, there are no answers for that. I'm beginning to think that what we call God probably doesn't have the ability to get involved in alter these outcomes. Am I off on that? What do you think?
Well, you know, these are deep philosophical questions, and I tend to want to move more toward experience than I want to do philosophy. You know, philosophy is one of those things where it's a great exercise, but it inevitably you end up in these cul-de-sacs, and it's hard to get out of them. And for me, when you have the experience, then that changes everything. So, you know, someone who is a skeptic is they're basing that on their life experience to that point. But I think there's always the possibility that there'll be a new experience that can change that at some point. And I think that probably this person, it's a necessary phase of his life right now to engage that perspective of skepticism. But one thing I know is that we are people who are constantly changing. And just because we have one perspective today doesn't mean we're going to share that same perspective tomorrow. And I think that's one of the great things about life is that we do have the ability to evolve and change in the way that we see the world.
How many instructors at the Institute, and how do you get them to think this way, or do they feel this way coming in?
Well, I think we probably have about 15 instructors at the Institute. And now that's for our residential programs, and the residential programs are 6 days long. But we also have 2-day programs that are done off campus, and so we have probably about 50 or 60 outreach facilitators who give 2-day programs in different locations around the world. If people are interested in that, they can go to our website and see if there's an outreach facilitator in their area, so that they can kind of get a taste of what we do. The residential facilitators, though, come in. They are contractors, and they come from various locations to do the 6-day program, and then they go home. And I think all of them, without exception, are at the Institute because they have had experiences that have been absolutely life-transforming for them. So it isn't as if they're there for a paycheck. They're there because they have been changed at some basic dramatic level, and they want to share that with people who are open to it.
Okay, stay with us. We're going to be right back with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll talk about other dimensions. Okay, next hour we'll take your phone calls with Paul, so get ready, and some of your stories as well. You've heard what we've been talking about, the push toward the spiritual end of your life, life after death, and maybe some of those other stories you can share as well. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, let's talk about some of these other dimensions, which you seem convinced are out there, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. What's out there?
Well, I think that there's so much to explore, but let me kind of begin this by bringing it back down to earth a little bit. You know, we tend to think of other dimensions as being so exotic, but if you pay attention to your daily life, you'll notice that there are many times when you drift in and out of awareness of the physical world. For instance, a lot of people have had the experience of driving down the highway, and suddenly they're thinking about what has happened yesterday, or they're worrying about the meeting that's coming up, or they're remembering something from their childhood. Next thing they know, they're 40 miles down the road, and they have no awareness of anything that has been intervening in between. There's no awareness of the physical world whatsoever. So you have to ask yourself, you know, exactly where have you gone at that point in time? You're certainly not present to your physical body, but you're present to some other kind of world that you carry within your head, or within, you know, things that you're worrying about. Just to give you an example of how extreme this can be, a year and a half ago, I was traveling on an airplane, and I picked up a book called Wicked, which is a wonderful book because it tells the story of the Wizard of Oz from the point of view of the Wicked Witch of the West. And I was absolutely engrossed in this thing because it's so beautifully written. So I grab this, and I get on the plane, and we're flying, and I'm not paying attention to anything at all, but I'm just the book. And eventually we're supposed to land in New York City, and the stewardess comes on and she says, if you look out the left window, you can see the Statue of Liberty. So I'm thinking, okay, we're going to land in about 5 minutes or so. But we keep flying, but I don't really notice it because I'm engrossed in this book. I'm so yeah. absorbed by it. And then I look over, and there's this woman next to across the aisle. She looks like she's absolutely terrified. I can't figure out what she's about, but it's a great book. And that's why I go back to the book. Anyway, we come down after flying around for, what, maybe 45 minutes after seeing the Statue of Liberty. And when we hit the runway, the pilot's really leaning on the brakes really hard. We come to a stop, and the whole plane erupts into cheers. And the stewardess comes on, believe it or not, and she says, "Welcome to Oz." And I said to somebody in front of me, I said, "Where are we?" We were supposed to land in LaGuardia. He says, "Well, we're at JFK." And I said, "What in the world are we doing at JFK?" And he said, "Didn't you hear? They couldn't get the flaps down on the plane. We were flying around to burn off fuel in case we crashed. And
God.
And didn't you see all the fire trucks lined up along the runway when we came in?" And I said, "No, I didn't." So, which tells me, you know, we have the capacity to move into different realms of experience. I clearly was not on that plane. I was in my body was in a life and death situation, but I had absolutely no awareness because I was literally in the Land of Oz. Well, when you think about that and think about the fact that when we go to sleep every night, we leave our bodies and go off into other domains and other dimensions, well, it's not such a big deal after all. It becomes something that's a very normal part of our everyday experience. The question is, can we move into these other dimensions with awareness, and can we do it at will? Can we start to explore them intentionally rather than haphazardly? And that's what we teach people to do at the Monroe Institute.
Very good. And what about the answer, what's it all about? I mean, what does this all mean? This existence, why we're here, why we live, why we die. What's it all for, in your opinion, Paul?
In my opinion.
In your opinion.
My opinion is that I think we come to this planet because it has some unique experiences for us. And so among those are the fact that when we come here, prior to our entry, I think that we are much more unlimited in our potential, in our being. When we come into this world and we take on this more limited form, and because of that limitation, we can learn lessons that we're not capable any other way. I think some of the primary lessons, and probably one of the most, is this lesson of compassion. learning to deal with other people in our limitation and in their limitation, and learning to see that there's the glory that underlies all of that. And in that, as we take on that compassion, I think that we grow at some spiritual level. And I think that there's something very, very precious about that, that we don't really even begin to understand in this form. But when we change forms and we let go of the physical body, and I think we take something very, very precious with us. That's kind of the Reader's Digest version of my answer to your question. But, you know, talk to me, you know, 10 days from now, I may have a different answer because, you know, it's always changing.
Yeah, well, it does always change. And, you know, I'm beginning to believe again, as I used to, that this is a lessons learned place here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about. I mean, the things we do for other people, the enjoyment that people will get out of life, this is lessons learned. And it is by no means the end all, but it's a stepping stone for us. And, you know, I think that's what we're here for. And I'm taking that perspective, and that has changed my life, Paul. I mean, dramatically. Mm-hmm. You know, I still drive myself and work hard and everything like that. But, you know, I'm a little more tolerant of people these days. You know, I still don't like rudeness and people who are inappropriate. But in terms of just one-on-one with people, I think I've learned a lot over the years too. I don't know. Maybe I'm advancing. What do you think?
That sounds like it. I mean, I think that what you're saying is absolutely correct, not just for you, but for all of us as we age and as we see life from that larger perspective, then our values change pretty dramatically. And maybe that's what this Earth School has to offer to us, is that change in perspective that can become very, very powerful to us as we open up to not only our own potential, but also open up to the potential of other people. So I think there's something pretty marvelous in that.
Right at the bottom, we call this Travel Tips for the Spiritually Perplexed. Tell me about that phrase of your book, A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe.
Yeah. Well, I think that in our society, you know, we've assumed that so many things about religion and spirituality that may or may not be true, and we've actually even stopped asking the really important questions because we've been sort of comfortable with the answers that we have received. But one of the things that adds to the confusion, I think, for a lot of people is the culture that we live in is so dominated by the scientific point of view, where the only thing that's real is what we can touch with our five physical senses. Everything else is an illusion from that perspective. And that perspective has actually served us very well because we've made tremendous advances within the physical domain. But I think it's come at a pretty steep price for us because we are, at our core, multidimensional beings. And when we confine ourselves to just one dimension, the physical dimension, we have lost something that is truly wonderful. And I think so many people have an emptiness about them because of that, because they long for something that's magical, something of wonder, and yet they don't even know where to begin to look for that. And I think that path of the beginning of that path starts with really sensing that longing and admitting it and noticing that it's there, because it's that longing that tells us that there is more to be discovered. But as I say, so many people have just stopped looking altogether, and so they don't even know where to begin to look. And sometimes our religion hasn't helped us in that regard, because we have looked at people, for instance, who might be in the Bible, and we put them up on a pedestal, and there's this great divide between who we are and who they are. And we think, well, we could never be like that. We could never embrace that for ourselves. But if you read the Bible carefully, Jesus said something that is very important. He said to his disciples, "These things that I do, you will do as well and more." And I think that that more begins when we embrace this larger aspect of what it means to be a human being. Because it isn't just the physical dimension that is important. It is the physical dimension and in being in communion with the non-physical world as well that brings us to a place of wholeness that we may not be able to approach any other way.
What about reincarnation? Believer?
Very complicated question. And people, I think, approach this from a very simplistic perspective. One of the issues for me has to do with what does it mean to be an individual? Because we, if we're confined as an individual to this physical body, then we can think, well, you know, I've had past lives and I've lived those as an individual, or maybe I'll have future lives and I will live those as an individual. But if you start to move beyond the confines of the physical body, then you're confronted with a very, very deep and interesting question, which is, how big am I? Where do I begin, and where do I end? And that throws the issue of reincarnation into a whole different realm, because you know I could be many different people simultaneously. You know, I was watching something that was called Spirit Space just recently. It's a movie, and Fred Allen Wolf, who I just love, tells the story of waking up one night, and he's in his log cabin, and he's got to go to the bathroom. So he goes to the toilet, and he's urinating there, and then all of a sudden he realizes, wait a minute, I don't have a log cabin. What am I doing in a log cabin? Suddenly he realizes that he, Fred Allen Wolf, is in the body of somebody else, living their life, looking out through their eyes, and experiencing their world. Well, if we're capable of things like that, and he's not the only person I've ever heard do that, if we're capable of things like that, then truly, who are we? Where do we begin, and where do we end? But the other thing that makes it a difficult issue for me is the issue of time. We tend to think in terms of past lives or future lives, but in reality, as you move beyond the physical, then time takes on a completely different nuance for you. And so there may, for me, not be such things as past lives and future lives, but maybe there are simultaneous lives that we're living right now. If you talk to shamans and gurus and people who have worked in the spirit world, you know, they will tell you that time is an illusion. So for me, it's not an easy question, and I tend to look at it quite differently from most people.
How many people take this journey? How many people take the path and do the right thing and become spiritually enlightened?
Well, I don't think spiritual enlightenment is a destination. I look at it as more of a process. So the question for me is how many people start off on the process? And from the perspective of the Institute, we've had about 30,000 people go through the program from its inception.
That's huge.
Yeah, and what we found is, and what we're really beginning to discover, is that these people are different because of the experiences that they've had there. So we're beginning to toy with the idea, what would it mean if we were to expand what we do beyond just providing an experience for individual development and growth, and begin to find ways to bring together these people who have been changed in dramatic ways to see if we can begin to impact the world in dramatic ways as well. So that's just something we're toying with right now to try to figure out different ways that we can do this.
Where do you get the book, Paul? A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide.
You can get it at Amazon.com. A lot of the Barnes & Noble stores have it. You can also get it at BarnesandNoble.com. You can order it through the Institute, Monroe Institute. And you can also go to my website, which is SpiritualHitchhiker.com.
How many courses, how many classes do you have a year?
Ooh, boy, I would say...
Is it ongoing?
Yes. I think we probably have about 50 classes during the year. That is not only the introductory course. We have many graduate courses beyond that. But the introductory course of the Gateway is a prerequisite for most of the entry into most of the other courses.
And it's in Virginia, right?
It is, right. actually located in Virginia, about 25 miles southwest of Charlottesville.
Generally, what do people say about the courses after they come out?
Well, I think probably two of the comments that we hear most is that this has been the best week of my life, and this has absolutely changed my life completely. We have so many people who look back at their time as being a real turning point, and their life is heading in one direction. They go through the course, and all of a sudden, their life takes a turn that was unexpected. And I think one of the reasons why that happens is because when people come through the Institute, they start listening and taking seriously what it is that they really want to do in life. So many people don't even want to entertain that question because it's too painful for them, because they feel like they simply can't make the changes that they need to make. But when they go through the courses here, more often than not, they start listening to the heart, and they start finding the courage to act on and move in directions that they secretly wanted to do all along, but up until that time, maybe never had the courage.
Well, that's a good point, too. Of everything that you have encountered now in your career, since you took the course and it changed your life, and now look at what you're doing now, what do you still think has been the most profound experience that you've ever had? What one thing has really done it to you?
Well, I think for me, one of them, and it's hard to narrow it down, but the one that comes to mind right away quick is... the first time I went to Focus 21, and as you may recall, Focus 21 is the bridge state between physical matter reality and non-physical reality. And all at once, I found myself flying over what I would call a city of light. And it wasn't lit up from neon signs and incandescent bulbs and that kind of thing, but the buildings themselves actually glowed from within. It was an unearthly beauty, like unlike anything that I could have ever imagined, and the buildings themselves seemed to evoke some kind of emotion that was overwhelmingly powerful. Well, I was hooked, you know. I thought, wow, this is amazing. So I go running through the city of light, and I wanted to explore everything that I possibly could, because I knew that sooner or later we were going to be brought back, and I wanted to absorb this as best I could. So I would dart into one building, and I'd have a conversation at one point with a being of light, and we started into it, and I said, well, no, wait, I know I should stay here, but I really want to see the whole city, and I'd run out again, and then I came into an arena, and there was an arena of people of light again, started into a conversation there, and there was a woman to my right who was not a person of light, but I didn't really recognize her. But I ran out of that, and then I went into this library where I thought, you know, I knew that if I took down a book, I could experience anything in all of time. But I ran out of there, and then it was time to come back. So we come back into the group, and we can share if we want. And there's this woman across the group from me, and she raises her hand. She says, I went to a city of light. And then she began to describe a lot of the things that I had experienced. And I thought to myself, wow, does that mean that everybody went to the City of Light? But nobody else mentioned it. So finally it got to me, and I said, I went to the City of Light too. And the woman across the room looked at me, and she says, yes, I know, I saw you there. Well, that was the first time I had any inclination that some of this could be confirmed from somebody else.
Yeah, that is so cool.
And as we were going into the next experience, another woman in the group said to me, I want to go to the City of Light, too. And I said, well, okay, I'll take you. So we go into the next experience. She appears right in front of me. I grab her hand, and we take off. And then afterwards, after it was done, we came back, and I said to her, well, I took you, didn't I? And she said, yes, and you practically tore my arm off.
Paul, we'll come back now with phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.